Welcome to Spotlight on Africa with me, Daniel Finnan. This week, we're going to hear about conservation efforts in Madagascar. New research has investigated efforts to save tropical forest in the Ankeniheni-Zahamena corridor. This area in the east of the country is part of a pilot under the RED scheme, reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation. The idea is to make sure that forests are preserved as part of efforts against climate change, and it's supported by the World Bank. Under this project, and through World Bank safeguards, people living in the forest are supposed to be compensated. Compensated because the locals are now hampered by conservation restrictions aimed at maintaining the forest. However, this new research suggests that those living in the forest haven't actually been fully compensated. The study spent more than 2 years interviewing several communities, more than 600 people, and the researchers estimate that up to 27,000 people have been negatively impacted. The bigger picture here, according to the research, is that global conservation efforts are not paying people enough to make sure they're properly compensated. Let's hear from one of the researchers who spent a number of years working in Madagascar. Welcome to Professor Julia Jones from Bangor University in the UK. She's been researching the cost of conservation in tropical rainforests in Madagascar. Julia, tell us a little bit briefly about your research in Madagascar, please.
Okay, so I've been working in the eastern rainforests of Madagascar for 18 years. So, you know, there's people in Malagasy villages that I've known all my adult life. And I've become really interested over the last 5 or 6 years in how conservation, as well as bringing benefits, also potentially brings costs. And so this recent research that we're publishing comes out of the very intensive studies we've done over the last 3 or 4 years, trying to quantify how conservation can bring costs as well as benefits to local communities.
Why are the local people being hit so hard by conservation restrictions in the areas that you studied?
Okay, so conservation of tropical forests is hugely important to all of us on this planet. So we all benefit from the carbon that's locked up in tropical forest trees and in soils. We benefit in terms of the wonderful biodiversity that these forests hold. And of course, there's local benefits from conservation as well in terms of potentially improved climate and water supply at a local level, potentially. But for people who are living right on the forest frontier and whose livelihoods depend on clearing land for agriculture, cultivating crops for a few years, letting it regenerate, moving on and following that cycle again, when they're prevented from carrying out that traditional agricultural livelihood, that brings very real costs.
What compensation were they supposed to be given?
Increasingly, there's recognition around the world that where poor local communities do suffer a cost from conservation, there should be effort made to ensure that these global benefits that we all feel from conservation are shared locally, some kind of benefit sharing from conservation. And the specific scheme that we've studied in this piece of work, the communities were supposed to be compensated for these opportunity costs of conservation restrictions through micro-development projects that were designed to compensate for this loss of income and loss of livelihood. And in exchange, households were given micro-development projects such as improved agricultural techniques, new seeds, sometimes even equipment to help with agricultural production, but particularly training that was given as a way of compensating for these costs of conservation. Unfortunately, what our study showed, you know, while these micro-development projects are needed and valuable, they were really far too little to far too few people, and the benefits really didn't come close to compensating for the cost of conservation.
Basically, what you've concluded is that poor people living in these tropical forest areas have been suffering, have been going without because of these conservation efforts that they're not being compensated for.
Yes, I mean, that is the main conclusion. I think there's a lot of really important caveats to make here. The conclusion is not and should not be conservation, therefore, is some kind of a bad thing. Conservation of these tropical forest regions is needed. It's important for Madagascar as a whole, really important in terms of tourism, and it's a unique selling point of the country. It's an important part of Madagascar's identity, is conserving its natural heritage. It's important for local communities as well that forests are not lost. But currently, conservation is not being funded sufficiently to ensure that it's not done in a way that causes costs to poor, vulnerable local communities. So really, this is an argument for much greater recognition of these costs of conservation and then more investment to ensure that local people don't lose out in helping to provide the maintenance of tropical forests from which we all benefit.
Do these people really understand this idea of conservation enforcement and why it's there? Has that been properly explained to them? Have they been properly informed by the local authorities about this?
Malagasy government declared this area as a formal protected area, the area we're working in, back in 2015. So legally, it's gazetted as a protected area and certain rules apply. Now, the communications rules is challenging in these very remote areas. So there can be mixed understanding of exactly what is and isn't allowed, particularly because new conservation rules come on top of generations of changes around what is and isn't allowed with respect to poor rural farmers clearing land for agriculture. So at different parts in the history of Madagascar, clearing land has been promoted by the government. And for now, well more than a decade, it's been strongly, strongly discouraged. So there's actually a national moratorium on burning forests, regardless of whether it's formally a protected area or not. But of course, communication of conservation rules is challenging, and understanding of poor rural communities scattered over really quite large areas and often in quite inaccessible areas can be limited. And there are cases where people have had enforcement actions taken against them for breaking conservation rules when they genuinely did not believe that they were breaking any rules. They thought they were carrying on doing what their ancestors had always done, what was their legitimate right.
You say in your research that this isn't about money going missing through corruption or anything like that, but simply about the amount. How do you determine this balance between conservation and deciding what local people need to survive?
There's a tendency in sort of global environmental policy to think of avoiding deforestation in the tropics as a cheap way of tackling climate change. And I think part of that comes from the fact that the people that are having to change their livelihoods are people far away living in very rural places, far away, who have very low political sort of power and voice compared with you and I having to fly less, drive less, etc. So I think that's why there's a tendency to think that avoiding deforestation in the tropics is a cheap way of tackling climate change. And the real point we're making in this paper is, yes, it probably is a relatively cheap way. I mean, we're still arguing that it's worth doing. This is a valuable way of trying to tackle climate change. But we need to play the full costs with respect to the local costs of conservation so that the poor local communities are not the ones bearing the cost of providing this benefit to us all by locking up carbon through avoiding deforestation.
This study concerns about 27,000 people. Now, the RED scheme is not just in Madagascar. Do you think this issue is restricted just to Madagascar, or could it be a bit wider spread than that?
Okay, so the specific technical analysis that we did in this specific paper is looking at a very narrow question. You know, we're looking very narrowly at, were people compensated in line with a specific environmental policy that says that people under certain situations should be compensated? That was the focus of this study. We would argue that this has lessons that are much broader than that. So there are many, many cases around the world where people are bearing costs of conservation. It's very, very hard work and time consuming to spend the time going out and really quantifying these properly and really looking into the benefits that have been distributed, who's received those benefits, and comparing those costs and benefits and the distributions of those costs and benefits. That's what we've done in this study, and that's very unusual. However, there is a large and growing body of literature around the world that's increasingly recognizing that conservation does have costs, and also increasingly positive literature looking at how can we best ensure that benefits from conservation are reaching these poor local communities so that they don't bear the costs in the future.
Thank you very much there to Professor Julia Jones from Bangor University on the line from the UK. The researchers say that they've shared their results with the World Bank as well as the Malagasy government. For this week's Spotlight on Africa, from me, Daniel Finnan, thanks for listening.